Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Air and naval forces of the United States launched a series of strikes against terrorist facilities.
Pan Am Flight 103 crashed into the town of Lockerbie.
The sanctioned acts of terror in Africa, Europe, the Middle East. Will not
stand. Well, the second season of Showtime's hit series Homeland premiered last night. Carrie Mathison, played by Claire Danes, is back, as is Nicholas Brody, the U.S. Marine sergeant and former prisoner of war who has been turned against the U.S. by al-Qaeda. Critics love it. The Emmys showered it with awards. And even the president of the United States says Homeland is one of his favorite shows. But just how real are the terrorist threats and counterterrorism efforts portrayed in the series? Joining me now for Context and a TV Show is June Thomas, culture critic for Slate and self-professed Homeland fan. Welcome back.
Thank you, Brian.
And also with us is Bob Baer, former CIA case officer who was primarily assigned to the Middle East. He also writes for Time and is an intelligence columnist there. And he and his wife, Dana Baer, are authors of The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. Hi, Bob Baer. Welcome back.
Great to be back.
And let's get right to a clip from early in the series. This is last year. Sergeant Brody has just been rescued after being held for 8 years by al-Qaeda. And in this scene, Carrie Mathison is talking to her former boss, Saul Berenson, the CIA's Middle East Division Chief, played by Mandy Patinkin.
Sergeant Brody's due home from Germany tomorrow morning, which gives us just under 22 hours.
To do what?
To authorize a surveillance package, to tap his phones, wire his house, follow him wherever he goes.
David will never sign off on that, you know it.
Well, of course he won't. The White House needs a poster board for the war, and David just served him up on a platter. That's why I'm coming to you.
I'm not going over his head, not on a hunch.
But if I'm right, if he is a terrorist, we need eyes and ears on Brody from the minute he steps off that plane.
Never happened. But out of the question.
All right, so Bob Baer, how close is this to reality, having an American's house bugged like Brody's is in the show? And is this how potential insider threats are dealt with?
No, absolutely not. I hate to puncture this this bubble. But the CIA does not follow American citizens inside this country. The FBI does that. The CIA can take somebody like Brody in Afghanistan, pick up, let's say, an intercept, and open a criminal investigation, which the FBI would be brought in. And once he came back to the United States, it would be the FBI that would tap his phones, would bug his house, would use warrants. But this is the whole problem with CIA programs, is they don't work overseas. I'm talking about TV and feature films.
Uh-huh.
They work in this country, sort of like if you remember 3 Days of the Condor. People want American context. It's familiar to them. But Hollywood's always had that problem of taking the CIA back to the United States in its full reality. But that doesn't detract from the show, which is very good and very smart, and the scripts are great, and the acting is fabulous. I don't, you know, detract from that at all. It's just not the way the CIA works, not before 9/11 and not now.
Now, listeners, we definitely have time for your phone calls on Homeland. The only thing we ask is that you stay away from season 2 spoilers, since the first episode was just last night. But what are your thoughts on the show? We have Bob Baer, former CIA agent. We have June Thomas from Slate. Do you have questions about the depiction of counterterrorism as shown on the program? Any questions about how the CIA really operates, how these kinds of threats are really dealt with? Any theories you want to check? 212-433-WNYC, or you be the television critic, 212-433-9692, or as always, you can post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, June Thomas, there's something else in that clip that we heard. Carrie says that the administration is looking for a poster boy for the war, and Sergeant Brody is it. So putting aside the fact that he's a sleeper agent, what do you think of Sergeant Brody, the character, being the poster boy in this TV show about war and terrorism? Now taking place, the plot is taking place nearly 10 years after 9/11.
I think that's very apt. I think that the show Homeland is almost a follow-up to 24, which the producers also created. It shows what we've done to ourselves and what we've done to our troops, to our relations with other countries to our intelligence officers. You know, that they're all scarred and damaged by what's gone on in the last 10 years.
He suffers from PTSD.
Yeah. And, you know, so does everyone, really. Everyone is suffering in some way. Carrie is bipolar, so she is. It's her brain chemistry to a certain extent, but it's exacerbated by the guilt and the desperation that she feels to avoid another incident. And you know, even though I think it isn't a realistic show. However, dramatically, it is realistic because even in that surveillance that Carrie does, which is ridiculous, we see that one person can't possibly surveil even the most dedicated one. Therefore, the nation can't handle all the surveillance information that it's getting.
And by the way, this Abu Nazir character is much more nuanced than our understanding of Osama bin Laden, right?
Yeah, I think there is an attempt, perhaps foolish, to personalize and humanize these forces. I think, again, the show is trying to make us try to understand or try to question what people's motivations are.
Bob, how does that come into play in real life and the field? Do you try to understand an Osama bin Laden even, or people lower down in the chain, as complex human beings when trying to figure out how to protect the United States?
No. Intelligence communities don't deal with that. They don't look at subtle motivations or flaws in the terrorist. The idea is to find them and locate them. But what I think is the show is good is how for the last 12 years we've been chasing our tail on terrorism inside this country. We've been looking for those dots, and we've turned these, the National Security Agency algorithms on these threats, and we've just been running through phone calls desperately looking for the next plot because that's what we want to stop. I mean, there's nobody, it's done the wrong thing, but it's just sort of driven us crazy, including creating a bureaucracy in Washington. An intelligence bureaucracy, it's just $80 billion a year for intelligence is what we're spending. And we have little to show for it, and we have the character, and here Claire Dane, it's being driven by it too, trying to find this terrorist. And what is a dot? What isn't? And how do they connect?
Right.
What are the degrees of separation? This is why it's such a fascinating show.
In fact, here's a clip where we first meet the character, Carrie Matheson. She's a field agent in Iraq, but she is quickly put on probation and sent to Langley. Back home, we see her meeting with what are called agency assets. So here's a clip from one of those encounters where Carrie and Lynn, the girlfriend for hire of a Saudi prince, meet in a spa.
I really don't want to do this anymore, and I mean it, Carrie. I feel like I can't even breathe now. They're going to suspect something.
But Lynn, all you have to do now is keep your eyes and ears open for the remainder of your contract with the prince.
That's what you said when you recruited me in Bahrain, but I never thought that I would get 8 feet from the most dangerous terrorist in the world.
No, you are the only agency asset to have had eyes on Nazir in 7 years.
Asset? I am just some girl from Sandusky, Ohio, who you talked into helping out her country.
And I won't let anything happen to you.
So, Bob Baer, give us a reality check on this, too, the idea of an agency asset. It makes for some compelling drama on the show. How does it compare with real CIA work?
It's, real CIA work, I hate to tell you this, but it's pretty boring. It's picking somebody up in a car and driving around in the middle of the night, usually an argument over how much they're producing or what sort of access they have to real intelligence. It's dropping them off. It's going back to your office the next morning, getting on your Panasonic hardbook and a tough book, and then just start typing the report up. It's just endless counterintelligence exercise where you're looking at the details, comparing it to intercepts and the rest of it. The thrill of break-ins and, these drama with assets and meeting in baths is all hyped. But on the other hand, come on, we wouldn't, if we just portrayed intelligence work as it is, who would want to watch it? So that Hollywood has to heighten the drama in this. They did a good job, as I said.
There goes the entire recruiting effort, Bob. If you can't portray spy work as glamorous, then why is anybody going to sign up?
Because they're believers, it's sort of like drone pilots, they think they're doing something against terrorism, but it's sitting in front of a flat panel screen in Nevada or someplace and, looking at the world through, you know, black and white images just isn't the kind of drama we want in our lives.
All right.
There are exceptions, and people are always looking for that exception.
Listeners, your comments or questions about real-life CIA work for former agent Bob Baer, your comments or questions about the TV show Homeland for June Thomas, culture critic from Slate, 212-433-WNYC, and Gary in Queens, you're on the air. Hi, Gary.
Hi there. I don't think Baer may agree with me, but let's see. One of the things I think Hollywood misses is the difference between pretext and rationale. The rationale is really theological. It predates the pretext. But the pretext is forwarded as a video, a cartoon, something to divide the United States and weaken its response. In the movie, it was an air raid that killed the Al-Qaeda chief. Am I correct?
Which movie? In Homeland? In the TV series?
The first season.
Yeah, it was his son.
Hollywood presented a pretext, just like the Islamists present a pretext. They don't know it, but they showed that the Al-Qaeda guy, his son was killed in an air raid.
Are you saying,
that's,
Gary, that the Hollywood producers themselves are trying to divide the country, or that's what they're depicting?
I don't think they realize it. They think that they really accept Bin Laden's complaint about global warming and, you know, videos and all this other cockamamie stuff.
Although this is made by the producers of 24, June, who are famously right-wing on foreign policy.
Yeah, it's not quite clear what the politics of the writers of the show are. They, you know, 24 was a product, but I do think that there was an attempt to, which may have been important dramatically, but perhaps not a very accurate representation of what the motives for people committing acts of terrorism are. It's not usually a personal pain. It's usually an ideology.
And we should say that politics and foreign policy weigh heavily on the show. Season 2 opens with Brody as a congressman. And here's a clip in which CIA officer Saul Berenson, played by Mandy Patinkin, is speaking with David Estes, the director of the CIA Counterterrorism Center, played by David Harewood.
There's an 11-month gap in Ebenezer's activities. Started around 2 years ago. He goes silent, like he fell off the face of the earth. Theory is there might have been some event that precipitated this. Something that hit him personally, took him out of action for a while.
And whose theory is that?
Just look at this.
It's all redacted. What the hell am I looking at?
I think it's a drone strike.
A drone strike. So, Bob Baer, I wonder what the Homeland fan-in-chief, Barack from Pennsylvania Avenue, thinks about this twist in the plot.
Oh, he just, I mean, this, you know, this is the worst combination is Washington politics and Hollywood, frankly. You know, it really gets you into trouble, like 24 did on renditions and enhanced interrogations. It was this illusion that torture works. It's never been proven. The SEALs waterboarded each other, but that was always to break each other. It had nothing to do with reality of extracting information. So I think we all get caught up in these popular conceptions, which aren't very helpful. And the drones, we just don't know enough about. There's so many pictures of people, of families being killed up there, that it's there is collateral when you have the radius, the kill radius of one of those things. Now, whether this is actually driving people to kill, I don't know. I spent a lot of time in Afghan prisons and talking to suicide bombers that their vests didn't go off. And their motivations just were all across the board. You know, from one guy thought he was signaling Allah with a suicide vest, whether to take his life or he had no idea. Had explosives around him. It didn't go off, and he didn't kill the governor of Kandahar. But he certainly didn't even know what a drone was. And I asked him about Palestine. I said, "Are you driven by Palestine?" He said, "What's Palestine?"
And so,
you're getting into the grain. And it's very difficult for Hollywood to do and keep up the drama.
We just have 30 seconds left, June, and there were two terrorist plots in the first season. One was a pretty conventional suicide bombing, which went awry, and there was the second one, much more complicated, which involves Brody getting close to the vice president. We just have like 30 seconds left, but what did you think as a culture critic of that complicated plot?
Well, again, it was this conflict between realism. It was not a realistic situation. However, the thought that Brody would be driven, would sort of separate himself from humanity, but would be brought back to his senses by the voice of his daughter, I found very dramatically compelling and dramatically believable.
Well, I think that we have managed to get through this conversation without spoiling anything for those who DVR'd last night. So we thank Bob Baer, former CIA case officer, who writes for Time.com and is the co-author with his wife of The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story, and June Thomas, culture critic for Slate magazine. Thank you both. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.